Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello. It's me on my own. No Chris Glasson today. So I've been given the duty of doing the intro and the outro for this week's episode. Not actually done this before, gone solo on an intro. Solo on an intro, I like that. Right, so when we do the intros, what do we have to do? I know most of you probably skip the intros anyway, that's fine. So we do a nice shout out to our sponsors, which is Bamboom Creative and Love Beer. We normally do a little shout out to the Distraction Pieces Network, that's all our friends over there. That's the big network owned by Scroobius Pippikins, our pod dad. Lots of good stuff over there. Tuesday Night Duel with Jim Smallman. Jason Reece Stop and Search. Saucy George has got a really good podcast over there. She talks about drugs and shit. What else? Distraction Pieces itself. That's all right. But there's a couple of new ones. So there's one from Mr. Super Handsome, Brett Goldstein, Films to Be Buried With. I mean, I've listened to a few of the episodes so far. Well, I've listened to all the episodes so far. He's got guests such as James Acaster, Catherine Ryan, Pip's been on there. It's pretty mega. It's a good chat. If you're not completely up to speed on Brett and who he is and what he does, go and watch Super Bob to start with. But he's been a guest on Pip's podcast, and as a result of hearing him on Pip's podcast, I was like, mate, we need to get Brett on Hardcore Listing, and I'm going to say it. Probably my favourite episode that we've done on Hardcore Listing. Brett done two top fives, but it's the top five Brett does on his top five worst stand-up gigs. That's one of my favourite podcasts, if not my favourite Hardcore Listing to date. So go and have a little look at that. Not that he needs any more support. He's absolutely smashing it. It's gone crazy, and rightly so, because it's a cracking listen. So go and have a little go on that. There's another one with the not-so-handsome Stuart Whiffin called Off the Beaten Track Podcast. It's my new podcast that I'm doing on my own. It's just, I guess it's got a similar structure into as Hardcore Listening, so far as, you know, we've got like an anchor point of you've got to get your top five in. Well, I have seven questions on Off the Beaten Track Podcast, and those seven questions I ask my guests. They have to answer those questions with a song selection. And them seven song selections that I ask are generally kind of spaced out across their life. So we do a big life story chat. A lot of it is around creativity and the area they grew up in, and how that area may have influenced and altered their creative journey. And we talk about all the music that they love. And it's not super cool music. It's the first record they bought and the first song that had an emotional impact on them, and the song reminds them of school, and it's chat like that. So it's you know, it's a nice little life story, but loads of music chat in there as well, which is what I like doing. It's my kind of go-to thing, nerding out about music and being nosy about how people have got where they've got, doing what they like doing. Excuse me. Anyway, today's guest is Mr. Josh Weller. Chris and I went to the Hoxton Square Bar and Kitchen, and we interviewed Josh. Josh had a top five that he sent over in advance, and lastminute.com went, no, I'm going to change it. And I'm glad he did. Go and check out Josh's back catalogue of stuff he's put out. Also, Josh is the frontman for the Kenniffs. Go and check them out. They're the shit. And what a funny dude Josh is. I'm going to shut up and just get on with the podcast. Enjoy it. I'll see you at the end. It's a drunken soiree in the Within. Chris and Stu present Hardcore Listing, the podcast.
Yep, we're recording.
Okay. You all right?
Hello, Stuart Whiffen. Yes, I'm very well, following our live show that we had here 2 days ago, Hoxton Square Bar and Kitchen.
Yep.
That's the quickest plug we've ever done on a podcast.
Well, it'd be nice to let us back, and we've got a day of recording today. We've got three to record. Yep. And this is the first.
Yes.
Should we just get straight on and introduce who our guest is today? There's some background noise before we do introduce, I guess, which is the ventilator thing for the kitchen. So hopefully they're going to turn it off in a bit.
Yeah, have you asked them?
Yeah.
This is an admin's type start to the podcast, isn't it?
Keeping it real.
Yeah. I don't think we've ever picked it up here before.
No. All right.
Have we sent everyone to sleep with how we started this podcast?
Weren't the most dynamic of beginnings, was it?
No. Should we brighten up everyone's day?
Yeah, let's bring some electricity into the room with today's guest, Josh Weller.
Hello.
You all right?
Pretty good. How are you?
We're all right. We're all right.
Congrats on the live show.
Thanks, mate.
Thank you.
What one is it? It's the third one we've done here. This one was another sellout, wasn't it?
Yep. Yeah, all good.
So that wasn't the first one.
Yeah,
it's our third time that we've done it here.
Oh, I retract the congratulations.
Yeah, we weren't really. No.
Okay,
we're kind of
another day in the
sort of season pros now. Yeah.
Another day in the office. Talking waffle to a room full of people who keep coming back.
Absolutely. Well, we've never met before.
Nope.
We literally met 5 minutes ago.
Yep.
Had a brief update on the live show and how it descended into stories of people pooing themselves. And a couple of poo stories we already had with Josh before we've even started recording. So
it's a universal topic of humour, isn't it?
Poo. Right.
Poo is never not funny.
No, exactly. No. You'd be above your station if you don't. You know.
Yeah.
You're trying to be too cool if you think that isn't
it's
funny.
It's an odd thing as well, because poo is always funny, but it's also... when you're not prepared and you see someone, like the other day, I just saw someone take a shit in the street and it was not funny. It was awful.
Wow.
I mean, sometimes, that's
concur.
Just,
and right, also, I concur and also apologise.
Yeah, and I'm also going to ask more questions about that. Where was this?
It was in a phone box.
Well, what do they get used for now?
Do you think that was a genuine
It was a mistake. It wasn't, I understand if you don't have somewhere to shit and you don't have a home, then shit in the street, go for it, go nuts.
Yeah,
but he was wearing a suit.
Fuck off.
He was wearing a suit. It was a Friday night around sort of Charing Cross. I say Friday night, it was Friday, Saturday morning.
Yeah, yeah.
The wee small hours of the morning. Yeah. And he was taking a big...
steaming one.
Jeez.
A phone box.
Just taking a shit in a phone box. And now I talk about it, it's really funny. But in that moment... it's one of those things where you're like, oh my God, that's just, oh, no.
You don't need to see that.
If you nipped in there to make a phone call, that's a...
yeah, but no one's
that's
nipping.
Now haunted by a brown ghost. That is...
who's still nipping in?
No one's nipping in
no
there,
No one's nipping into
make. I don't even think they put those, you know, the cards in there anymore, sadly.
What cards are you talking about?
The collector edition. Collector's edition.
When I was up in Scotland, a couple of weeks ago, I went right to the top. We went up to John O'Groats, we went over to Orkney, and we done a bit of a road trip, and it was so remote. And that was one of the main things, swerving the mountains and the wildlife and how stunning it was. I was like, check that, it's a phone box with a phone in it. They're still like all over them up there.
That's crazy.
It's pretty nuts when you drive through like the Scottish Highlands, and you do see like...
because you can't get a phone signal.
But they're cool as well.
Mm.
Like, phone boxes are like a beautiful old one on the side of a, you know, and they have new ones now in around here that are like on the side of like adverts. You can punch in and make free phone calls.
Oh, really?
I've not seen that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. They're all around here now. It's kind of weird.
When they first shut them down, like the red ones,
yeah, yeah,
like the ones that had the leather straps on the door, can you remember? So you hard to undo, weren't they? And British Telecom sold them off. I worked for a nightclub in Essex called an alternative club, you know, forever and a day. And this fellow bought a load of them, bought them off of BT for like peanuts, and then sold them on. And so, like, we see this advert. This is probably like 20 years ago. Like, telephone box for sale. So it's like, fuck, you know. And we got there, and there was two left. And we said, like, we'll have both of them. And he said, like, no, there's only two. You can have one. I said, like, we want two. And he was like, Tom Jones has just bought that to have it next to his swimming pool.
Really? Is he have one in the brush now?
Yeah, yeah, walking in the corridor. Yeah, still got the old
telephone. Do you think he turned
box
it into a changing room? Or do you think maybe there was a push button and it went down into
a toilet.
Like a back
I was going to say, it's a latrine.
Yeah. Just when everyone's wrecked about 3 o'clock, you just go in there and have a turnout, it's fine. All right, well...
We haven't come to talk about toilet conversions, have we? So shall we get stuck into it?
No. What have we come to talk about, Josh?
Well, so you guys asked me to do this about 5 days ago, a week ago?
Yep, about
something
that.
Like that? Yep. Yeah. And I sort of descended into like a top five hell.
That's good though. That's what we want, mate.
It's quite a thing to ask someone who, like, I spend my life, I'm so consumed by just stuff, just pointless stuff all the time. Movies and music and trivia and knowledge and, you know, just trying to just learn about as much pointless crap as I can. So this was really hard. It was really hard to come up with what I did is I came up with an idea.
Right.
And then I panicked and I came up with loads of other ideas.
Right.
For like for a top five list.
Yeah.
And I don't like the idea of defining things as well because, you know, your top five bands today will be totally different to your
tomorrow.
Top five bands. Yeah.
Totally.
Tomorrow.
It's transient.
It changes all the time. Yeah.
So before you settled on what you settled on,
yeah.
What was
got a list.
Right, let's do it.
So let's have your
top five. These are the top fives that didn't make it. And then I even thought, okay, I'm going to go really meta. I'll do a top five, top five.
I knew you were going to say that's fucking brilliant. Don't have done that.
But I did. So so the first one that I did was the one that I asked you, which is actually what the top five
cool.
list
was. Right.
But then I went down a rabbit hole. I did top five Star Trek Next Generation episodes.
Oh, you're not doing that?
No.
Oh, sweet.
Oh, okay.
Sweet.
I thought that was too niche.
Right, yeah. I mean, I've never seen it. And
You've never seen Star Trek?
No.
Oh, mate.
You have?
I have. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so, oh, okay. I'm intrigued now.
So, well, my initial, I've actually got like, I've got like 10 episodes here. I couldn't whittle it down to five.
So you fucked it off. Oh, brilliant.
But this, my obsession with Star Trek has been since, really only the Next Generation as well.
Yeah, because that was like, that was like late 80s, wasn't it?
80s into early 90s, yeah. And that's the one with Patrick Stewart.
Yeah, for sure.
And Data. And,
yeah. You know, I've got some incredible facts on that now that I never knew because I've never seen it.
You've never seen any of them?
I saw Rafa Khan. I really liked that when I was growing up.
Yeah, but that's a TOS movie. That's one of the original. Yeah.
I mean, I'm well old, so like, you know, I was in my sort of mid to late 20s, I guess, when that was all coming out. So
Rafa Khan came out.
No, fuck off. I was about 9 then, you knob.
It's an ongoing joke, dear, how old you are. So that's made my day.
No, but my obsession with Star Trek is always about... I'm always defending it to my friends as they think it's like a sci-fi... I mean, it is a sci-fi show, but that's not really why I love it. I don't really give a shit that it's in space, or that they're on a spaceship.
Yeah.
It doesn't bother me that they can go really fast or that they can go to other planets. I'm obsessed with the search for what it is to be a human and what the human condition is and why we strive for... I mean, the great thing about... You know the character Data? Do you know who that is?
Is that the one with the...
No, that's Geordi LaForge, who wears the visor.
Right, yeah, got a fact
about that. Chief engineer.
Data was in the originals, wasn't he?
No, he wasn't. No. Fucking
Data was the Spock of the Next Generation.
Right, okay.
So Spock was always trying to understand humans.
Yeah.
And then when they made the Next Generation, Data was kind of the Spock-type character.
Right, okay.
Who was a robot android who... who was always striving to understand what it was to be a human.
Okay.
So that's my... I think that's like a masterclass in writing. Because he starts as this robot, and then he becomes this... as the series progresses, he becomes more and more human. As his quest to understand why we like love or why we like friendships or, you know, what relationships are to us or why mankind can't exist without war.
He creates his own daughter at some point,
yeah,
doesn't he?
Yeah, so that's one of the episodes. That's The Offspring. Right. That's the first one that Jonathan Frakes directed.
Oh, okay.
Who played Riker, who was the...
I didn't know he directed.
Yeah, that's the first episode they directed.
Right.
And that's an unbelievable episode where Data builds a child, like an android child, gets in loads of trouble because he's created a robot without the permission of the captain, then protests that if you're procreating, you don't need to ask permission, and this is his way that he procreates. And then it goes to court, and then they try to take the daughter off the ship. And then the guy who comes to take the daughter off the ship, the daughter ends up malfunctioning, and he has to the data has to operate on his own daughter. And the guy who comes to... from Starfleet, who comes to take her off the ship. I can just hear how much of a nerd I am.
I'm loving it, mate.
But when the guy from Starfleet comes to take the daughter off of the ship to take, you know, to, because she's not really allowed to, they're not really allowed to have two of these singular androids exist on the same ship because it's too much of a risk. She malfunctions because she starts experiencing fear, which androids aren't allowed to experience, or they don't have the like an emotional chip.
Yeah.
And then at the very end, even this guy who's come to remove her is so moved by the by watching the father try to save her life.
Yeah.
It's an amazing episode.
It's great. We should point out that the Data's daughter was actually just a toaster. That's what he built. But the thing you'll say about Star Trek is what I have, and I always bore him and Scroobius Pip about this, is Battlestar Galactica, the new version of that, blew my mind. I don't know if you ever watched that.
Didn't.
But never watch it for the it's in space.
Yeah.
The relationships and the challenge of how they challenge religion, science, and politics and just human relationships. It's fucking the shit, Josh.
Yeah.
And I would really recommend it, man.
That's sort of why I went off, you know, the new Star Wars films as well, because they're so heavily based on the fact that it is in space.
Mm. Right, yeah.
You know, the original ones were sort of about a journey. And the last one was
and
just
pure,
like...
Pure, yeah, first that,
like, we can't
pure
rage
fairy tale.
On that. It was, yeah. Did you like it or not?
No, I actually went to see it the night it came out, and I was in Switzerland.
Yeah.
And I didn't realise it was in German. So the beginning starts, and the yellow text came up in German. I was like, oh, fuck.
I'm in trouble here.
So I left the cinema. And I thought it was, it's like,
it was, oh, I didn't
Star
like
Wars
it.
Star Wars is sort of odd now. It's like, I don't know, it's like your favourite dessert. If you have it all the time, it just stops being special, you know? And I've lost all interest in it.
I'm worried about Disney. You want to knock it out all the time.
Just like
now,
one every 2 years. Yeah, it's like there's nothing special about that, you know? you look really really upset.
Honestly, I'm so annoyed with the film.
What
could
you think
rage
of Rogue One?
It.
I thought that was really good.
Loved it.
I thought it was incredible,
I
Rogue One.
Rogue One was
great,
the
right?
shit. Like, my heart, you know, scenes toward the end, my heart was pumping.
Yeah.
I was absolutely flying. Because lots of unexpected stuff happens. Like, I didn't expect there to be a big star battle at the end of it, and it had a sense of urgency, and there was you felt jeopardy in it, like you didn't know who would like live and die, and so it actually that is actually what a story is supposed to have. And I feel like even like the most recent Last Jedi, I just didn't feel jeopardy. I didn't it was too much eye candy and not
Force
enough
Awakens as well. It was just like someone tapping you on the shoulder going, hey, you know, do you remember the Millennium Falcon?
Yeah.
There it is.
Yeah, there
it's
it
there.
Is. Do you remember the first two movies? Yeah, okay, because it is just this. Surprise! When I was watching it, I must say I quite enjoyed it, but, you know, I couldn't believe I was watching Force Awakens again. Have they just remade the other films?
I got hammered before I went to see it and fell asleep. Because it was a midnight screening, and I was so excited, and I was so upset with how boring it was.
Yeah.
That like, and it's odd as well, because like the new Star Trek films, I thought they're all great. I mean, the second one's a bit iffy.
First one's great.
Second one, I think again for the reasons on the second one, I don't think they followed enough of some of the other characters that developed in the first one.
Yeah. And the third one that Simon Pegg wrote, I thought was brilliant.
Yep.
The Beyond. It got really bad reviews, but I really, really enjoyed it. It was like a really long version of the TV show, you know. I thought it was great.
Yeah, man.
Anyway, well, I can take us out of this sci-fi hole.
Rattle off some more that didn't
make
the cut.
Top five TV theme tunes.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. Yep.
What would have been your number one?
Frasier.
Oh, nice.
Frasier, because it didn't have a theme tune. It had an out. Because at the beginning, it didn't. Yeah. It had one at the end.
Mm. Yeah.
But which is kind of weird.
Yeah.
Had like an outro one, but didn't have an intro one.
Yeah. Scrambled eggs, anything like that, didn't it? Something like that.
The beginning just went.
What else? What else was in your fire for theme tunes?
I would put the Friends one in there.
Yeah.
Purely because every time I hear it, it reminds me that I'm unemployed and need to, like, there's something. It triggers this odd muscle, this like weird emotional sadness for me. The Friends theme tune. Everyone makes. It's meant to make you happy. It makes me fucking sad.
But do you find it's a fucking irritating song?
It is. It's that tone in the voice.
It's like I'm wearing a. I'm always wearing a dressing gown on a Wednesday afternoon when I hear that fucking theme tune.
Fuck my life up, man.
Crackers and cheese and just, you know, masturbating too much. And like, it's just, there's something about that theme.
That'd be a great episode of Friends, wouldn't it?
That is. I feel your pain, Josh.
Do you know what? It's really
working like how we work as well. Like I find my nephew bought me a onesie and I sort of was like, I'm never wearing that. And then I find myself, like, I live on a ground floor flat. I find myself wandering around in that. like you know, way past the point where I should be dressed and changed, and people were walking past my front room, seeing like a 37-year-old man dressed in a onesie, just fucking his life up, basically.
I think with the Friends theme tune, it's like my daughters are into it now, so they're it's on
how
all the time.
How old are your daughters?
15 and 12.
Oh, okay.
So it's they've just discovered it, and it's, you know, for as a sitcom. It's pretty consistent, you know.
Hmm. How do they handle the sort of this reported generation, millennial, whatever, of people now finding it offensive?
Really?
Oh, mate, did you not read?
I have missed the boat on
people,
this.
I say people, I mean like a few people on Twitter. It's like, this is the thing. It's for like a Mashable article to be written. It's like seven people on Twitter were upset. It's like the youth of today is now annoyed.
It's an outrage.
And there are moments of homophobia by modern standards.
There's things. I watched an episode last night, and Joey is talking about his ability to be able to pull women with Chandler in their flat. And he talks about how he does it. And he puts his hand on Chandler's leg and runs it up his thigh.
Yeah.
And then their kind of eyes meet and they have this moment. And then they're like, right, should we man up? Yeah, let's have a beer.
Yeah.
and literally last night. I just thought, well, that's quite strange.
Yeah,
you wouldn't see that on TV now.
Yeah,
but I kind of didn't think anything more of it. But. Yeah.
Things have changed, definitely. That's always the way.
I find it odd to be offended by something that happened before you were born, or to be offended by, like, I mean, if you watch like Archie Bunker from like the 50s, it's like it's fucking offensive.
Yeah, but,
like,
of course.
It's just, you know, and it's but it's this idea of presentism that like you're offended by something that happened.
Yeah,
right. So that's interesting you say that, Josh, right? Because when I was driving home from Scotland, I was listening to Radio 4, and they were talking about the BBC. I think it's BBC or Channel 4. Radio 4, we're doing a kind of a feature, and they had an actor to reenact the Enoch Powell Rivers of Blood speech. And then it was completely two contrasting opinions on people just saying it's fucking the most racist thing ever, that should never be fucking aired ever again. And then the argument is, well, it's part of our history. It happened, you know.
Yeah.
People don't, you know, unfortunately, some people do still subscribe to that. But you can't change history.
Yeah.
So to talk about it would be strange. To not talk about it would be strange as well.
Mm.
You know, so it was...
Well, there was petitions in America to drop the character named Nigger Jim from Huckleberry Finn.
Huckleberry Finn, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and for it to be taught in classrooms now, there was active petitions for saying it was, you know, offensive, but it's like it's part of the character, it's part of the history, and it's
who
part
was a slave
story.
At that point, I'm sure would have been referred to as that at that in that
and then
part
of history. You know, there was a thing recently in New York with a woman trying to she was petitioning to get a painting removed from, I think, the Met Museum of a child, like in a kind of maybe potentially suggestive sexual pose of like a 15-year-old girl, but it was painted 100 years ago or something. And it's like, it's still part of your history.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean that you have to look at it in a sexual way now.
Yeah. Or applaud it.
Or that it was even meant to be. I mean, I've seen the painting and it is very sexy. But
can you send me a picture, please, Josh?
Yeah, sure. So my most recent picture on my phone.
Like, with the Friends thing, is like, I was watching an episode recently and, like, it's... aside from all the fact that it maybe is offensive now, which is insane. I mean, I remember watching it as a kid. Like, my mum's black, my dad's white. I remember watching as a kid and being like, I can't believe there are no black people in New York. Like, it was just my internet.
My God, there's no black people ever
in
Friends,
like,
is there?
Three black people in the whole.
What, in the whole show?
Ross has a girlfriend at one point, doesn't he?
Yeah, Ross and Joey. There's a black girl who dates
both
of them.
That's right, yeah.
They weren't going to have two black female characters in Friends. And then there's like some guy in the office who works with Chandler who's black. There's probably a couple more. But I don't think it was racist. I don't think it was racism. It was just, I don't think they did it to be racist.
Yeah.
I just think there was maybe or definitely an inherent racism in television film industry then. And it's got a lot better now. And like, and above all of that, I was watching it recently and I was like, how the fuck did someone get away with actually writing a monkey into the arc of this TV show?
Yeah.
That someone, they were like, hey guys, I have this great idea. How about we have these six people in New York? Oh, you want to add a black guy to the. No, 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 no. Oh. Monkey, right? Frasier, you've got the dog.
Yeah.
I think that's what it must have been. They must have seen the dog in Frasier and gone, we need a dog.
Sling like something furry in there.
Because it's like prop comedy, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's like, and then I watched the episode where they get rid of the monkey. And it was like one of the fucking funniest bits of TV I've seen recently where they made it really emotional.
Yeah.
Like he gets rid of the monkey and he's just had a kid as well.
Yeah.
In the series at this point, Ross has just had a kid.
Yeah.
He has a human child and he's upset that he has to get rid of his monkey. I don't think I'd give a shit.
Yeah. Chrissy's welling up at the moment.
What else did I have? I had top five 80s comedies.
Oh.
Another smashing one.
But I put Predator in there. I don't know if that counts as a comedy, but it's fucking funny.
So Predator.
It's a great film.
Don't bring that up. That'll be in for the next three hours.
It is a comedy. You ghost to this motherfucker. Get up just one more time. I'll bleed you real quietly. You're here. Got that. Like, it's a comedy.
Oh, it's great.
Am I having so fun?
What other 80s comedies are in there, Josh? I want to know.
Okay, so number one. I knew that Dirty Rotten Scoundrels would be number one.
Oh, right, films.
Mm. Yeah. 80s comedy movies.
Yeah.
Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, Michael Caine, Steve Martin.
It's great.
Most underrated comedy, I think, of all time.
It's cracking.
Yeah. I obviously like Ghostbusters, Trading Places, Planes, Trains, Automobiles, Blues Brothers. And then I had a bunch of Woody Allen films. And then I was like, I can't go on there with a bunch of Woody, because now you can't, can't talk about how I like Woody Allen films.
Yeah. That's all weird.
That's out. So Broadway, Danny Rose, Radio Day. He had a good run in the 80s as well, would he? Crimes and Misdemeanors, Hannah and Her Sisters. Yeah, Radio Days, Broadway, Danny. Broadway, Danny Rose has one of my favorite one-liners of all time.
I haven't seen it. Have you seen it?
No.
It's where he plays like a shitty talent agent manager who's had a bunch of acts who've got big.
I have seen it.
But they've all ditched him as they get big.
Okay.
And then there's the great line is he's talking to Mia Farrow. And she's talking about how her husband's dead. And she says to him, he goes, where's your husband? He goes, the mafia shot him in the eye. And Woody Allen goes, he's blind? And she goes, no, he's dead. And he goes, of course, because the bullet keeps going. and then I went into like a weird nerd territory where I did top five snare drum sounds.
What, you did that? You definitely lost me on that one, Stu.
Right, so I've got a few that I'm going to throw in there.
Hit me.
The first album by Ride, I love the snare sound on that. And I really like the snare sound that the Deftones use on White Pony.
RX Queen. Mm. That drum beat at the start of that song, what's his name? Abe Cunningham.
The
drummer.
Yeah.
I always want to say Richie Cunningham.
That would be even better.
But that's Ron Howard from Happy Days.
That's correct.
Isn't it? Yeah. Abe Cunningham is the drummer in the Deftones. Yeah, that's one of the greatest snare drum sounds. I still don't know how they got that sound.
Yeah.
And then on the chorus of that, there's a lot of sampled snares on that record as well, right?
Awesome.
It's phenomenal.
Yeah. Yeah.
That won a Grammy, didn't it?
It should have done.
Like Best Rock album, I think.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because we talk about this quite a lot, and it's like, I was talking about it with some people that come to our show on Saturday about the Deftones. For me, like, DJing around the time of the new metal thing. You and Pip grew up. You're friends with Pip as well. He said to say hello, by the way.
We're not friends. I know him.
Ironically, he said exactly the same. But
so give him a wedgie.
He didn't say anything. He just made a face.
Give him a wedgie and bluefish him.
He actually texts me when you text him.
Right.
And it was just a screen grab of your text saying, "Do you know Josh Weller?" And he just said, "What have you done?" That was it.
Brilliant. That was actually followed with, "Yes, he's a really nice guy. That's going to be a good chat."
Yeah, that's a sweet lie.
What was I fucking talking about? Deftones. I was saying, like, that whole thing with nu metal, it was wasted on me. Like, I just weren't into it. And you and Pip loved all your, like, Limp Biscuits and Papa Roach
kind
and all
of in
that.
A way. We knew what was going on,
but
there.
But Deftones
kind of, like,
weren't that.
They got bundled in
and it weren't.
They were not a nu metal, like, band. Nah. This is, I mean, I have issues with the term pop punk. Like, the Kennets gets, my band gets called pop punk quite a lot, and we're not a fucking pop punk band. But we get, you know, whenever there's a sweeping popular genre, I mean, like Jimmy Eat World as well, that Bleed American album is a great pop rock record. And that's all it is. It's a great pop rock record. But it is, they're a definitive emo band. You know? Like, Deftones were just a kind of rock band. They didn't rap, did
no,
they?
No, there was no, there was no, there was no, there was no samples.
They were more,
there was
for
no
me,
pair of turntables.
I mean, if you compare that to "If Only We Could Fly."
Yeah, like, exactly. For me, when I heard Minerva for the first time, I was like, just sounds like the shoegaze shit I grew up on. I was like, this is fucking amazing.
Yeah, and it stood the test of time, hasn't
it? Yeah.
That's got one of the most like rewarding choruses in any song ever.
Yeah.
It's because it takes so long to fucking get there. And it's like, "I don't care where, just far." And he shouts and then he's a beautiful voice as well.
Yeah, incredible.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we say they stand the test of time. Way better than nu metal.
Yeah.
In general, right?
We've done
there because it wasn't.
I met him.
Chino.
I wanted to say Shay, but that's not.
Let's go with Shay.
It wasn't
like
Shay Guevara, was it?
Like
Chino Marino?
Guevara.
Yeah. What's his name?
Chino Marino.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Okay, great. I met him in Westfield in Stratford.
Fuck off!
Yeah, really?
He was buying a belt.
That is brilliant. How pedestrian. You'd be like, "That's fucking I didn't expect..." Given you're a musician, Josh, you'd expect you'd probably bump into him backstage somewhere or whatever.
Well, no, that would be assuming we have a gig as high profile as well. So that's completely not going to happen.
We done top five musical collaborations, both good and bad, last week.
And I listened to this, by the way.
And I put Passenger by Deftones with... Maynard, what is his name? Keenan from Tool,
I had to refresh myself and listen to that the other day, and you're right.
That's one that takes ages.
Yeah.
So when you get that chorus, oh, mate, it is spunktastic. Yeah. Like, it really is, mate.
Spunktastic, folks.
What else did I have? I had top five 90s pop songs.
Oh, hello.
But then it went off into like a weird subcategory that was top five 90s pop songs with ridiculous lyrics.
Right.
Okay. As well. So I had Livin' La Vida Loca in there.
Oh.
Which is an odd pop song, because it's the second verse of that song is really, really dark.
She's into Superstition, the first
no,
verse?
No, she's into Superstition's Black Cats and Voodoo Dolls. I've got a premonition that girl's going to make me fall.
Yeah.
And then the second verse is, "I woke up in New York City in a funky cheap hotel. She took my heart and money. She must have slipped me a sleeping pill." Like, that's a fucked up, like...
Spice Girls never sung like that, did they? Do you know what I mean? No. That's not your...
I feel like had a woman sung that, it would have been a cause for incident.
Yeah,
like, hang on a minute, what happens?
Yeah.
Went back to someone's hotel room, they slipped you a pill, and now you've woken up naked with no money.
In an ice bath without a liver. Did you ever hear, talking about urban legends like that, did you hear the one about Ricky, when it was supposedly on like Spanish television, and it was like Noel's house party, and they'd set up a room in some girl's house, and he was hiding in the cupboard? And when she came home, she just went upstairs, and Ricky's hiding in the cupboard. But she's gone upstairs with some pate and spread it on her nether regions, and her dog's eating it out on live.
Fuck off!
Hang on a minute, Ricky Martin.
Who's it? He's only living to be La Mota.
Yeah,
and he's hiding in the cupboard.
And the cameras were out to jump out.
Yeah, and he's in the cupboard.
Did you just say "Living La Vida Lotus"?
Loca.
That's incredible.
For that one as well. Yeah, I mean, I think it's... I never saw it, but, you know, that was back in the days when you didn't just have the internet.
by your hand to just check anything your mate said to you.
I'm watching him recently. I've just been watching that TV show about the assassination of Versace.
And Ricky Martin's. Martin killed Versace.
No. Ricky Martin plays Versace's partner.
You're kidding.
And
that's brilliant. Yeah.
Ricky Martin looks fucking great.
Yeah. He looks incredible in this.
Is he sleeping in Tupperware? Does he look fresh as a daisy?
He's a hot. Like he's like what is he 50?
No, he can't. I reckon. If he was 30 when that song came out, I reckon he's about 45.
He still looks banging.
Yeah.
I haven't seen a recent picture.
He's aged better than you.
Top five Bon Jovi songs as well.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's two people who don't give a...
Pip would have
been there. I've only recently discovered how brilliant and awful... This is the great thing about Bon Jovi, is they have some of the best... Like, Runaway by Bon Jovi is a phenomenal song. Whereas Always by Bon Jovi is one of the worst songs I've ever heard in my life, but it's still brilliant because of how bad it is.
They're one of my wife's favourite bands, right? I have to... She goes to watch them at Hyde Park every year and all of that shit. And I read somewhere, and it was in Q or Select way back in the 90s, and they said, like, John Bon Jovi would love to be seen as Bruce Springsteen. Yeah. And he's never going to be seen as... He's never going to be credible, like... The music press say that Springsteen or Tom Petty or someone like that. But then someone said, the thing is with Bon Jovi, it's like having a finger up your arsehole. You love it, but you don't really want to tell everyone about it. And I thought, that pretty much sums up Bon Jovi.
But, did you ever watch there was a documentary, I think it was called When We Were Young, about 10 years ago, and it's all in black and white, which is an odd... an artistic directorial decision that they made, and it's just them. It's right before, because they kicked out Richie Sambora, the guitarist, a few years ago, and they made this documentary just before they kicked him out, and it's like Spinal Tap but real. It's phenomenal. Wow. Like, just Richie's, there's a great bit where Richie Sambora goes, people always ask me, what's the American dream? How about this? Guitarist, grew up in a garage in New Jersey, becomes a guitarist in the biggest rock band of all time, marries Heather Locklear. That's the American dream. I was like, God, man, that sentence just sounds like so much cocaine happened right before they called action.
But they put it in black and white to mark it over. And to me, that doesn't feel like
I think if I married Heather Locklear, I've lived the dream. She was the best.
Yeah, she was pretty. She was dreamy.
But that's the same as the Metallica film, right? That's pure Spinal Tap.
But I think that there's something about some kind of monster that, like, the self-awareness it takes to know what they made was absurd. That they spent $2 million just keeping a recording studio that they didn't record in for 2 years. And that they just, that, you know, they were only allowed to work between the hours of 10 and 3. And that the therapist started writing lyrics for the band. And that the producer started thinking he was in the band.
Sounds like Brian Wilson.
I think there's a genius in them taking a step back from the film and going, oh, wait, this makes us look insane.
But put it out.
It's still
worth. But do you think they did? Do you think, like...
Oh, absolutely.
Like, do you think...
I don't think Lars Ulrich is an idiot.
Right, and I wasn't going to say Lars, because I was going to say Hetfield, because I think he is. I don't think he's that self-aware.
But how can you not be? How can you...
Because if you're in one of the biggest bands of all time in the world, and you must have so many people blowing smoke up your ass, and I just think, does someone ever just go,
reality,
you look like a knobhead on that?
Imagine having only ever heard the words yes from the age of 18 years old. There's no way that you wouldn't be insane.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, they made a demo tape, and then they invented a genre.
Yeah.
And then they... didn't win a Grammy. You know, they lost the first year they did Best Metal Award, they lost to Jethro Tull. Yeah.
Should have swapped your guitar for a flute, mate.
Yeah, and then eventually, I think the next year, they won Best Metal Record or something. And then they make $100 million a year on merchandise still.
Because that's the thing, though. But
how can you not be crazy?
Because youth culture, and if you look at, like, you know, I grew up in the band T-shirt era.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? Early 90s.
You got one underneath that, haven't you?
Yeah, I'm just wearing my my Spiral Carpets T-shirt. No. but, like, everybody wore band T-shirts. Mm. And as a DJ, I would see who was coming in my club, and I'd be like, right, there's four people over there in a Wonderstuff T-shirt, and there's a couple of people over there in a Pop Elite Yourself T-shirt. I know what they're into.
You know where you stand.
But you don't really get that many people wearing band T-shirts anymore, apart from metalers.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. Metalers still wear their colours with so much pride, don't they? You know, and they are still such a. It's still such a sort of little movement, isn't it, metal? Like, you know, and it still comes through every year.
I think the guitar genres, they're still a huge, like, I think people still really buy merchandise because they know that it supports the band in a way that is, like, that the band absolutely needs, I think.
Pip's big on merch, isn't he? Like, people, like...
It's how we make our... it's how we manage the tour.
Yeah. Jay Beans on Toast was telling us his how he does his merch is fucking genius. Mm. And, like, we always said that. When it all started coming around and MP3s and all this shit was happening...
Well, that's when the 360 like, deal came
think,
in, wasn't it?
You've and, got and to think of other ways to make your money because it's not going to be from selling your records anymore. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's got to be about the people experiencing your music live and buying shit off you if they like you, so what else we got in the five drops? Because we are near. We
how long? How far?
We have been going for 35 minutes.
We should have done top five.
I also had top five cocaine songs, but we can skip that.
Okay.
Which is the songs that to me just sound like they must have been written on cocaine.
The whole of the Scarface soundtrack, I think.
Yeah, I had Take On Me, Africa, Maniac. Don't Stop Believing.
Yep. The energy in Maniac is incredible.
She's a maniac.
It's that like, piano line at the beginning. It's brilliant.
And, we didn't start the fire.
That, to me... I always thought that was like Joel's like take on It's the End of the World as We Know It by R.E.M. It just seemed like
Which one came first?
Oh, R.E.M. By quite a few years. That was End of the World as We Know
It. 80s though, right? Maybe it was 90s we didn't start
a fire. I reckon We Didn't Start a Fire was probably about 1991 and about End of the World we got... No, it got re-released when R.E.M. blew up with the Out of Time album, but that was on...
Are you a big R.E.M. fan?
Massive. They're one of my favourite bands. Yeah,
me too.
Yeah.
What's your favourite album?
Life's Rich Pageant.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay, mine's Around the Sun.
I've got to admit...
You know what, man? Reveal, underrated record.
It really is. It really is.
One of my favourite music videos of all time as well. The... oh, my God. That sugar cane that tasted
Imitation
good.
Of Life.
It's a great song. The video is unbelievable. Just that giant loop.
But I think... One of their greatest singles is A Great Beyond. The Great Beyond, from the Jim Carrey film.
Yeah.
And I just think it's beautiful. And I think I was listening to a lot of R.E.M. last week. When we was doing the collaborations again, I had Radio Song with KRS-One. Mm. And I also had Stipe guesting on Christine Hershey's
Your
Ghost.
You have Ebo the Letter in there as well.
That album is... It's the one that when it came out, I thought was absolutely incredible. And I've gone back to it and it doesn't deliver like a lot of the other stuff does to me now.
What, Ebo the Letter?
Yeah.
It's not...
Well, New Adventures in Hi-Fi, the album.
Yeah, it's
such.
Not their best record.
Yeah. For me, what is your favourite album?
I mean, I want to say Monster. I love everything about Monster except the songs.
Yeah.
Which, what was...
Let Me In is my favourite album.
What was Orange Crush on?
Green, which is probably, it was between Green and Life Rich Pageant for me.
Yeah.
There's a track on Green called
But What's
Hair
the Frequency
Shirt.
Kenneth is a great...
Mad Story as well, that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then I love The Reckoning, so I think that's a really underrated R.E.M. record. Just got Harbourcoat on it, which is a fantastic...
Fucking hell!
And I love how reluctant a frontman Michael Stipe is at the start of his career and how he becomes this powerhouse. And also the fact that they split up is... Like, there's so many bands now when I'm like, oh, dude, just stop. Just stop putting out, please. Because you're ruining your legacy.
We said Weezer. At the live show, didn't we, about Weezer, how the fans set up a group to stop them.
I had top five Weezer songs. Yeah, I had a top five Weezer songs as well. That was my other...
How their fan club set up a thing to stop
making
albums.
Weezer, I mean, the first two records are complete genius rock
absolutely.
Records.
Absolutely.
And I'm a big fan of the Cars as well.
Yeah.
So Ricky Karsek from the Cars produced the first Weezer album and he produced the Green album, the third album.
Who done Pinkerton?
I think they self-produced on that. And I mean, Pinkerton is a masterclass in...
Okay,
so my top five, actual top five, which I think we should just skim over because I feel like the ones I didn't do are better than my actual top five. But my actual top five is top five lonely songs. Which you could just put any Weezer song in there.
Right.
And like Pinkerton is a masterclass in
songs
loneliness.
Or albums?
Yeah, yeah.
Songs.
Okay.
Top five lonely songs.
Right, lovely.
And, but I mean, Tired of Sex, really lonely song, the opening track from Pinkerton. And then anything in the garage is a great lonely song. and the world has turned and left me here. And I don't think that Rivers Cuomo is now a bad songwriter. They still fill arenas. And, you know, every few years, you know, I don't think Beverly Hills, even though that song's 10 years old, I don't think it's a bad song.
It's not a great song, though.
But there's something about, again, like, how can you continue to write? If you're four nerds who play hacky sack, who become millionaires, and then you have to write songs imitating nerd culture when you're rich, how can you continue that? How can you
rappers sometimes struggle with that? Dizzy Rascal, sort of like from grime, from the streets where he came to sort of like his poppy sort of sensibilities that he got. It's tough, isn't it? But he tried to say, well, I'm just talking about what I am now. But that will alienate your original fan base.
Because I say to you about Arctic Monkeys, because you like what they do now. And
I like TM. I thought it was a good record.
And
I
want to hear them talking about kids in tracksuit bottoms with Paul Q scrapping in. Like,
yeah.
And
I how
like,
can they? Yeah.
But they're not going to because that life.
They also partnered up with Josh Homme.
No, of course not.
They're not those kids anymore. But I do find, like, I loved Alex. Alex Turner was so important for me as a kid. This nerd looking at his shoes, playing this Aggie fucking rock music with these lyrics I knew.
Yeah.
And then he's become like karaoke Uncle Elvis now. Like with the slick back.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
And it's like, be yourself. I personally now find it hard to connect.
I can't connect with
this.
It.
Like, I'm really cool now.
The look. Yeah, they're trying to see and find their feet of how they come forward.
AM was a good. Like, why do you only call me when you're high? Great song.
Yeah, it's great.
And then, what's that song called?
Not Barbarella.
Do I want to know?
Yes, cracking.
All right, so top five lonely songs.
Let's do it.
Should we get into it?
Yeah.
Okay, which one do I start with? Okay, so I have a Beach Boys song.
Perfect.
I Just Wasn't Made for These Times.
Oh,
which
right.
I saw the Pet Sounds show at the Hammersmith Apollo recently. Did you go?
Was he down to South End?
Yeah. No, wait, around end of last year.
Yeah.
End of last summer.
Yeah, and he had
Blondie Chaplin. Al Jardine.
Al Jardine was
And Al Jardine's son.
Mate, he had some pipes on him.
Jesus Christ, yeah. And listen, you're not really going to watch Brian Wilson. You're not going to watch Brian Wilson perform. You're going to watch Brian Wilson sit down and watch Pet Sounds performed while he occasionally chips in.
Yeah.
And once you acknowledge that he doesn't need to be able to sing anymore.
Yeah.
I don't need him to be this virtuoso on stage. As long as he's present. And like he's just you're in a fucking room. Like I went to see Woody Allen. Like at the Royal Albert Hall. Again, you can't really talk about Woody Allen, but like just being in the same room as Woody Allen.
Yeah.
He didn't touch me.
Yeah.
But like,
wrong age.
But like the Brian Wilson show was phenomenal, man, to see those songs. And they did like 30 hits and then did Pet Sounds.
Yeah.
That's insane.
Yeah.
He come on at Southend and he went, we're going to play Pet Sounds, but should we just play some other ones? Ooh. And then he just went straight. He started with California Girls, and it was like, oh, fuck's sake, this is just going to be incredible. And everyone there, I mean, it was a mixed age group, but there was lots of men 20 years older than me and lots of people kind of my age and stuff in there. And everyone was just...
Got good wheelchair access.
But everyone was just kind of chin scratching and standing there with their arms crossed, like watching it, loving it. When he just... The lights went down, it just lit up the piano and he played God Only Knows. And I've got to admit, I just looked around and I've never seen so many middle-aged men trying not to cry. Their bottom lips were just going left, right and centre, and it was fucking magical. And the best thing about it, not one prick had their phone out filming it.
I noticed that as well. Yeah. Like one person was filming.
Yeah.
And like, what did he end with that show? Was it Heroes and Villains?
No, he finished with In My Room.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And it was, I don't know. He's, that album for me, I bought that record on CD in Sound Clash in Norwich when I used to go up, get the train up to the city on weekends, buy CDs. I'd steal my parents' CDs. I'd go to Woolworths, buy new jewel cases, and then put all my parents' like old CDs that weren't scratched in these new jewel cases, and then take them back to, not Sound Clash, it was HMV, take them back to record stores where you didn't need receipts.
Yep.
And then get like a voucher and then buy records with it.
Yeah.
This is good.
And I remember
that's a good hustle.
It was just the CDs were dying, so everything was like $3.99, you know? And I bought Pet Sounds, and then I would listen to it every day on the way to school. And that song was like being a mixed race kid in Norfolk. I don't think I saw any other mixed race people apart from my, you know, my mum and my sister. And like, I don't know, just, and not feeling like, you know, I wasn't into sports and I wasn't into, you know, just that song, like, what's the opening line? I keep looking for a place to fit in where I can speak my mind. It's like, that's an unbelievable, they say I got brains, but they ain't doing me no good.
Yeah.
Oh, and it's got a theremin solo.
Yep.
You know? It's just such a beautiful, and I think it's on the tail end of the record, isn't it? It's like the penultimate song, maybe. Or maybe it's the last, yeah,
is
the
that
last
your favorite
song
on the album?
Caroline.
No, Caroline No is the...
Caroline No, yeah.
No, I think that's the fourth song, I think. I think that follows Wouldn't It Be...
No, Wouldn't It Be Nice is after that, it's Don't Talk...
Yeah.
And then...
Caroline No is my favourite.
Is it my favourite song on the... I don't... Is it?
Yeah. Yeah, I love that.
I mean, they're all brilliant.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm... It's just... I mean, it's such a cliche to call that album a masterpiece.
It is, right? And my two faves are that and What's Going On. And they are the ones that... kind of Q readers and Mojo readers like regard as a great, but there's a fucking reason for that. It's because he's fucking great. It's as simple as that, you know. It's like there's a reason that everybody listens to that, you know. Even when you hear it fresh ears now, you still think this is out of time. It doesn't sound like anything else. It's just fucking incredible. And like, you know, that I don't think it's muso to say that that's a masterpiece.
Is What's Going On, is that the one with, which has got Sexual Healing on it?
That's the last album. That is Midnight Love.
Before his dad shot him.
Yeah, Midnight Love is when he discovered the 808. And so
is that 70s?
And 80, 81, I think, because they were saying, have you watched the 808 documentary on Amazon?
No.
About the evolution of the drum machine. I was watching it the weekend.
Wow.
It's fucking incredible. It obviously starts with fucking Kraftwerk and then it obviously goes, and it goes, Zane Lowe presents it, and it goes over to the States, and then they're talking to all the different sort of hip-hop producers, and they talk about Planet Rock, how that comes together, and like Bambaataa's not on there because I think he's in a bit of trouble as well, isn't he?
Who was?
Africa Bambaataa.
Is he in trouble? KRS-One, they're all getting shaved.
Yeah, KRS-One's in trouble as well, isn't he?
Yeah.
But then the two remaining Beasties were on there talking about, and they were saying like, and they had Phil Collins on there, and they were saying, when you listen to things like One More Night and all of that stuff, like, Another Night, Another Day in Paradise, whatever it's called.
That snare drum.
It's all 808.
Wow.
And he was saying, as a drummer, I mean, you know, you can't get a drummer to just play ding, 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 like for fucking 15 minutes while you're trying to work it out, because he wants to do something else. He wants to show off. He said, so I just bought an 808. And they were saying they couldn't believe that this guy that had been making this incredible orchestrated soul music, like Marvin Gaye, not Phil Collins, then just had this thing. And it was just fucking sexual healing. But he went out to Berlin to do it. I'm sure it was Berlin or Hamburg. And then it cuts in the film to Soulwax, who found one in his secondhand shop that had come from his studio. And when they got it, they pressed play and the preset was
Shut
what they
up.
Used to record sexual
what?
Healing. And so, like, yeah, it's pretty fucking mad little doc. Like,
I heard this about the guy who wrote the synth, the theme tune to Stranger Things. Like, he had to buy a second synth because he didn't want to mess with the presets of how he got that sound for the theme
tune.
Yeah,
right. That was pretty good. I love just the theme tune for that and the intro graphics that they did on Stranger Things.
Is that the theme tune? Was there,
had it been used for something else then?
What, the Stranger Things?
Yeah.
No, he just liked it. He just, I think they were like, well, we're probably going to get a second series or something. And he was like, oh, dude, he just didn't want to touch any of the presets that had recorded that sound. So he had to go buy the same, like, an exact replica
Wicked.
Of that synth. But, like, Sexual Healing's an odd song. The opening line is,
oh, baby,
like
let's
an
make
oven,
love tonight.
Isn't it?
Isn't it, oh, baby, let's make love tonight?
No, isn't it, I need some loving, I'm like an oven. I only heard it on the radio the other night,
I'm
and I was
hot,
like
that's
an insane first lyric for a song.
Oh, baby, let's make love tonight. I'm hot just like an oven.
Yeah, it's hot like an oven because I need some loving. That's like, that takes some balls to write that down and go, yeah, I think that's good, yeah.
I'll run with that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, you've got to be so sure that you need sexual healing.
Yeah.
And that you've got to have a serious libido to write the lyric.
Or a temperature. Maybe he just had gonorrhea and he was just fucking burning
on
up.
On fire. Yeah. Need to dip it in a pint of milk, dude.
What was next on the list? Okay, so my next one was I'm the One by The Descendants.
Okay.
Punk rock band. One of my favourite punk rock bands.
I can't think of that.
It's not a really well-known song, but I encourage anyone listening to this to check out The Descendants. The Descendants invented the kind of melodic punk genre.
The frontman was?
The frontman is Milo Walkerman. The drummer is Bill Stevenson. So Bill Stevenson was in Black Flag.
Mm-hmm.
He was later in the Lemonheads. He's still in The Descendants. And he's like one of my punk... I mean, I have a Descendants tattoo on my leg. Like, they're one of my favorite bands of all time. And
what Lemonhead stuff did he play on?
He did the late 90s stuff.
Right, so he didn't do Shame About Ryan.
No. He didn't do that. I think he filled in. Him and Evan Dando are like bros.
Right.
So he did a lot of drumming for them, I think, around the late 90s.
Nice.
And but I'm the One is just a phenomenal... It's on Epitaph Records. It's on the album Everything Sucks, which is the first Descendants record. So they started in the mid-70s, and they... did an album in 1996. And when most bands get back together, it's generally not always great. And they made this like unbelievable punk rock record. And that's, again, I bought that album when I was about 10, 12 years old. And it changed my complete perception of music. And it's just a song.
Does it ever take you back to a place?
Oh, mate, completely. That? And Bill produces all the records, and he's a phenomenal producer. And the record still sounds new, still sounds like a great, like a band in a room. I love records when it just sounds like they put microphones up and hit record, you know. There's so much energy. And these guys, but I guess they were 35 when they made the record, and like, you know, there's so much fucking anger and like nerd rage. But I'm the One is a song about watching a girl that you're in love with an abusive partner or a boyfriend who's a dick, and just waiting in the wings and just saying, I know that, you know, I know that you and me are meant to be together, and I just have to wait out you being with this dickhead till I can make my move, you know?
Swoop in.
Yeah, and it's got the line, you know, you call me late at night, every time he picks a fight, you know, like, and it's kind of like this guy who's like the shoulder to cry on, who's like the girl's best friend and he's secretly in love with her. It's a fucking great song.
What we'll do as well, Josh, is we'll put together
a little tracklist Spotify.
Spotify playlist for
this
as well.
Get
so
these, we'll put them on there.
And so anyone that listens to this can then go over to our Spotify site and have a listen to all these songs as well.
Okay. Number four, Curveball, Rick Springfield, Jesse's Girl.
Okay.
That's a song about being alone, right?
Yeah,
it's a lonely song. It's
for sure.
Who's watching his Jesse as a friend, He's always been a good friend of mine. And then he's in love with his mate's girlfriend.
Mm.
It's a tough one.
And Rick Springfield is another one that, like, I think he's a really underrated 80s pop star. And I tried to get my mate into him recently, and my mate was like, he's a like John Bon Jovi. He's a Bruce Springsteen ripoff artist. Bruce Springsteen poster boy teen pop version of Springsteen. Yeah. I think Rick Springfield is amazing.
I think I've only ever heard Jesse's Girl.
Oh, mate, check out Love Somebody, Don't Talk to Strangers. He had like a bunch of great songs. How Do You Talk to Girls? He had all these great 80s pop rock songs. But Jesse's Girl is like, to me, it's the pinnacle of just of pop rock writing. Like, there is no better.
So,
I'm
quite intrigued.
Well, it has that. It's weird because it's uplifting as well. It has that uplifting tone to it as well, doesn't it?
I'm just thinking, like, this is quite. Where did that kind of interest in American 80s garage rock come from? Because you said about the Cars earlier and stuff like that as well.
I'm obsessed with the Cars, yeah. I think the Cars are probably my favourite band of all time.
Really?
Yeah. I don't know where it came from. My dad didn't really listen to it. My parents listened to so much varied music, it's difficult for me to... You know, my mum's Mauritian, so there was loads of French music. But she also loved glam rock, like T-Rex and The Suite. And then my dad was in folk bands and Kaylee bands and shanty.
Who's the big rapper in the beginning of the 90s?
French?
That rapped in his Creole, isn't it? Is it Creole, the dialect? Creole.
I don't know.
MC was it Solo?
MC Solo. Yeah, I used to
French,
listen to stuff.
It?
Yeah, it was decent.
Did he have a hit here?
Yeah. I'm sure he was Mauritian.
Really?
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, you think I'd know that?
Yeah. I probably got that wrong.
No, he was a magician.
Guesswork.
That was it.
But yeah, I just think Jesse's Girl is like one of the most perfect pop songs ever written. The middle A is one note. Like if you can write a section of a song that's one chord. Genius. And it also has my favorite lyric ever in the second verse, which is which goes, you know, I feel so dirty when they start talking cute. I want to tell her that I love her, but the point is probably moot. Just to get the word moot into a song in itself deserves
I can't think of a time I've seen that in a lyric.
No.
Have you ever heard moot in a song before?
No, really.
No.
Not.
And then the middle eighties, and I'm looking in the mirror because he was this hot guy as well.
Yeah.
He was this Rick Springfield. He's still a good-looking guy. And the middle eighties, and I'm looking in the mirror all the time, wondering what she don't see in me. I've been funny. I've been cool with the lines. Ain't that the way love's supposed to be? And it's just like, no, it's not. I'm looking in the mirror, like, what are you doing? Like,
you know, John Bon Jovi does that all the time.
Dude, going back to that Bon Jovi documentary, one of the documentarians asks him in the film, do you miss playing small venues? And this amazing thing happens where John Bon Jovi tries to top what he's saying. And you can see his brain processing how he tops himself. So he decides to just have a triplet of things he says, so each one improves on the last thing he said. Brilliant. But he runs out of ideas as he's doing it. And the documentarian goes, do you miss playing small venues? And he goes, the band has always catered to big venues, and I'm very comfortable with that. And, you know, people ask me, you know, do I miss seeing the whites of people's eyes? And then the triplet, like, starts. And he goes, fuck that. I want to play the desert. And then he pauses, kind of looks to the side for the next thing to say, and he goes, I want to play the desert and sell it out. And he pauses and just goes, more than once.
He upset me. He was in I think he starred, because he's done some roles, and he starred in a John Carpenter's movie, Vampires, and that upset me. Because up until that point, I was a...
And it wasn't even John. I keep wanting to say John Bovey, because now that thing that went around social media, the really shit tattoo that... Does it say... but it's got... It's one of their lyrics, and it's just got John Bovey underneath it. And I just thought, that's the worst... The best worst tale I've ever seen. And then I was reading a thing, and do you know Felix and Orlando? You know the Maccabees, didn't you?
Yeah.
And Fee's label, Yala. I think it's one of the guys from Magic Gang. That's his, on his arm.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and I was like, that's incredible. If that's true.
Did he get it done as a joke?
Is it ironic?
Yeah.
What does it say?
I'm sure it's like I've got to find it on my phone.
What's the lyric? I can't remember the lyric.
I'm sure it's one of the lyrics, and then it's just got John, like,
John Bovey.
I'm sure it's John Bovey. I'm gonna find it. But
he's an amazing. John Bon Jovi is an amazing lyricist. However you want to interpret his lyrics, like Always by Bon Jovi. Do you know that song?
Yeah.
Which is one of my favorite music videos ever, because it's just
what goes on. What happens in
that? Oh my god! Okay, so the music video, in a nutshell, opens on a couple who are like a hot young couple. Okay, I'm looking at the tattoo. It's amazing. It's my life. Oh, that's it.
John it's my Bovey, life. Yeah. John Bovey.
The music video for Always is a couple, young, attractive couple. Girl goes out to get groceries, comes back, and sees on the TV screen, because he's wired a camcorder to the TV screen, that her boyfriend is shagging the housemate. Kicks him out. No, sorry. She runs out of the house crying and is sat on a pavement outside a warehouse in tears. And another really good-looking guy who's 90s nerdy, he's in a plaid shirt and is clearly buff, but he's wearing glasses.
Yeah.
So he's a nerd.
He's a nerd,
right?
Yeah.
He picks her up and he's like, "Hey, what's going on? Why are you crying?" And takes her up to his warehouse and then goes, I want to paint you. So she, you know, is very coy and is wearing a robe, and he takes his shirt off, and he takes his shirt off while he's painting, and he's buff. And then
it can obstruct arm movement.
Yeah, yeah. And then she gets really comfortable and removes all her clothes. He paints her naked. She calls her boyfriend the next day and goes, "I'm really sorry." And he goes, "I'm really sorry." He comes to pick her up from the warehouse. She's had sex with the painter at this point.
Oh, he must have took his glasses off then.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Mm, yeah. Yeah, yeah. She wasn't going to do it. And then he took the glasses off. And she was like, "Hey, hot stuff. Paint this." And
there's a hunk under those glasses.
And then he sees the painting of her naked and throws paint over it and stabs it and stuff with the paintbrush. Gets really upset that even though he's cheated on his girlfriend, he gets really upset that she's then had sex with someone else. And then she runs out of the apartment. And then it ends with the boyfriend walking away from the apartment as the nerd painter walks back to his apartment and the apartment explodes. It explodes. Yeah, yeah.
That sounds like Black Mirror. That's amazing.
So good. It sounds like a pitch that someone went in to pitch the music video, and everyone looked like they were getting bored halfway through, so he just started making shit up.
Then it just blows
it sounds
up.
Like he just started making it up from the start. How's it start with a good-looking couple? Tell us more.
That was such a 90s thing. Could you remember that film, She's All That?
Yeah, I can't. And it was the actor.
What was the song? Was that Kiss Me? Was that
Kiss
the song?
Kiss Me was in it.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was
it's one of Stuart Turl's favourite movies. That
the actress was called Rachel Lee Cook, and she was absolutely beautiful.
Yeah.
But in this film, they put some thick rimmed glasses on her. No boys are interested.
Cook's
and
not.
She turns up at a prom, the glasses are off. Oh my god, she's a straight 11.
Yeah. Taylor Swift was trying to pull that off, wasn't she? Until a couple of years ago, she was like, "I'm just a mid country Western girl in thick glasses. I'm just a little nerd." And it's like, come on.
Yeah.
No, you're not. You look like an angelic statue made of marble. No one is buying that.
Brilliant.
Okay. So that's three of my top five. Okay.
So is this two?
This is number... they're not in order.
Oh, right, they're not.
I couldn't... I Want You by Elvis Costello and the Attractions. Oh, do you know that song?
Nice.
You know that song? Great.
Have you seen the film, I Want You?
No.
Ah, there's a film called I Want You, and I can't think who directs it, and it's... Beautiful English actress. Fuck. And it's a British film.
She's a great actress, fuck.
And, and, oh, my God, she's... Oh, it's the one... Oh, fucking hell. I'm going to think of it in a minute. I'm going to look it up. And that was where I first heard that song.
So this was late 80s?
No, I didn't have, like... I loved all the kind of early Costello and the Attraction stuff.
Okay.
But I'd never heard Blood and Chocolate. Then I saw this film and I heard that song. But
did they play the whole song? In
the whole song.
Really?
For the sex scene.
Wow, so there's a
Rachel White's.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And, yeah, it's her and... I can't think what the guy is that... It's a dark film.
But so this is 90s?
Yeah, okay. And, but...
90s Rachel Weisz is like my... I mean, it's...
Smoking hot.
And you like that song.
I love her so much.
You are just fucking... Honestly, next time you're wandering around at 3 o'clock on a Wednesday afternoon in your dressing gown, wanking too much, you need to go and watch that film, man, because that will soundtrack your wanks for about the next fucking 6 months, man.
It's such a sadistic, like, heartbreak, breakup, love song, lustful. It's from
sinister as fuck.
It's from his last album with So there's two things I know a lot about, right? And that's the Concorde, Chet Baker, and Elvis Costello. Those are the three things that I was obsessed with as a kid. And that album is his last album with The Attractions, which you can hear that they hate each other at this point. It's 1986. Some nerd trivia is on the back of the album. They have the musicians' names, pictures of all of them. They have Bruce Thomas, Pete Thomas, Steve Naive, whose name is Steve Naive. Do you know why he's called Steve Naive? It's because when he joined the band when he was 17 years old, and in the second tour, he went, "Hey guys, what is a groupie?" And that's why they called him Steve Naive.
Love it.
And then Elvis Costello's name on the back of the album is Napoleon Dynamite.
Right.
Which is, and the film have always denied that that's where they got the name of the film from.
Off.
Yeah, yeah, it's crazy, right? And it's an album, I guess he was 32, 33 when he wrote this record. Nick Lowe produced it. It's this pissy, vinegary, divorce, breakup record. I don't know where my career's going. They double track loads of the drums and the bass to get this Phil Spector. It just sounds like a band in a room that hate each other. And there's so much anger on that. Like, Uncomplicated is one chord, basically, the opening song. And it's one of Elvis Costello is the king of one-liners as well. Like, every lyric on that album is an amazing one line. Like, what's the opening line is "Blood and Chocolate." I hope you think when you're over me, there's no one above you. That's a great one from the first song, and the second, "I hope you're happy now." Like, it's such an angry song about your girlfriend being with a new guy, and like, if I knew then what I knew now, I never loved you anyhow. Like, there's these amazing lines.
Yeah, wow. Who was Costello's girlfriend then?
From the Pogues. Yeah, Riordan.
Yeah,
I think that was her name. Yeah, Kate.
Caitlin O'Riordan, wasn't it?
Kate Riordan, Jordan, Kate, something. But yeah, and she wrote the lyrics, a lot of the lyrics on that album. She did Crimes of Paris and she did Tokyo Storm Warning as well, yeah. And I mean, Tokyo Storm Warning is like an unbelievable, like, the sky fell over cheap Korean monster movie scenery. Like, the lyrics of that album are unbelievable. And I Want You is maybe Elvis Costello's greatest song. And it's 6 minutes, but it feels like two. And it starts as this kind of lullaby love song. And it goes, "Oh, my baby, I love you more than I can tell. I don't think I can live without you, and I know that I never will." And it's a very melodic three-chord love song.
It's very lullaby.
Yeah, and it falls apart at the end where he starts adding these notes that don't fit. "Oh, my baby, I love you so it scares me to death. I don't think I can live without you, and I know that I never will." And then this whammy bar, like this discordant chord.
Yeah.
And then the song kicks in, and it's just the most, it's this perverse look on a breakup of him. And you kind of feel like he's getting off on it. Like that he's kind of set, he's imagining his girlfriend, ex-wife, whatever, ex-partner, having sex with her new partner. And the first few times I heard it, I was like, "Oh God, that's not." And then after a while, a few listens, I was like, "Is he like into it? Is he getting turned on by the idea as much as he's repulsed by it?"
Yeah.
It's like, I can read the lyrics out if you want.
Yeah,
it's,
go for it.
It's, "I want you, you had your," so "I want you" is the refrain that keeps the start of every line at the end of every line. So it's, "I want you, you had your fun, you don't get well no more. I want you, your fingernails go dragging down the wall. I want you, I woke up and one of us was crying. You said, young man, I do believe you're dying. If you need a second opinion, as you seem to do these days, you can look in my eyes and you can count the ways." He goes, "I want you. Did you mean to tell me but seem to forget? Since when were you so generous and inarticulate? It's the stupid details that my heart is breaking for. It's the way your shoulders shake and what they're shaking for. It's knowing that he knows you now after only guessing." That's a,
that's
it's the
great
thought of him undressing you or you undressing. "I want you. He tossed some tatty compliment your way when you were fool enough to love it when he said, I want you. And then, I want you. The truth can't hurt you. It's just like the dark. It scares you reckless, but in time you see things clear and stark. Go on and hurt me, then we'll let it drop. I'm afraid I won't know where to stop. I'm not ashamed to say I cried for you. I want to know," this is the line, "I want to know the things you did that we do too. I want to know if he pleases you more than I do. I might as well be useless for all it means to you. Did you call his name out as he held you down? Oh, oh no, I want you, oh no, my darling, not with that clown. And then you had your fun, you don't get well no more. Every night when I go off to bed, I want you. It's just like, and it's just such a sadistic song. And the way they recorded it as well. That the,
and it builds and builds, doesn't it, the music as it goes on.
And at the end of the song, Nick Lowe, the producer, pulled out all of the instrumentation. And all you hear at the end, when he's just saying, I want you, it's just the bleed from his headphones. So it's
really?
Just, yeah, the drums, the basic guitar, there's an acoustic guitar. I think there might even be a click track in there. But all you can hear is what Elvis Costello hears. So as he's singing his vocal, they take everything out, and all you can hear is the bleed from everything that was in his headphones. It's, it's just...
You need to listen to that song.
It's a masterclass in songwriting, yeah.
And you need to watch that film.
I will.
It's a crack of eight.
What did you think of his Bacharach album?
Yeah, I thought it was... I don't know. I recently watched the documentary. I think it was a couple of years old, and they put it back on the iPlayer about a month ago, where he goes back to where he was born and stuff like that. Have you seen it?
No. Oh, the BBC documentary.
Yeah,
yeah, I did see it.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that. And I just fucking love Pump It Up. I think it's so good.
It's just the one line...
Yeah. And I do like...
What's the line? Out in the fashion show, down in the bargain bin. It's like, he was so good at these like punch. Like every lyric is a punch in the face, especially with those first two. The opening line of his first album, of My Aim Is True, is now that your picture's in the paper, being rhythmically admired.
Yeah.
Which means someone's jacking off to a picture,
and
it's like it just gets totally. It's such a brilliant line.
Yeah.
And like, I don't want to kiss it when the things in my head start hurting my mind.
Yeah.
Like, every time I phone you, I just want to put you down. It's like, he was on fire. I mean, I love Get Happy as well. I think that's a really underrated Elvis Costello records. Yeah.
I just think he can do it all, can't he?
Mm-hmm.
Like, he can turn his hand to anything. I love the kind of the early pop stuff. I Can't Stand Up for Falling Down. I think he's fucking genius. Yeah. But even some of the kind of mid to late 80s, so like the singles like Veronica and stuff. Like that. I really like Veronica.
Yeah.
But yeah, I've got to admit.
He wrote that with Paul McCartney, didn't he?
Really?
Mm. Veronica was him, yeah. That's Is It All in That Pretty Little Head?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's him and McCartney, yeah.
I never knew that.
Yeah. They wrote like five songs together, and I think one ended up on. Is that on Spike?
Yes.
Yeah, and then McCartney used one for one of his solo records as well.
Right.
But. Yeah, I really like North as well. That's a really overlooked, that's like early 2000s, and that's like an album of love songs of him meeting his wife, falling in love with her.
Because he's married to...
Diana Krall.
Diana Krall, yeah.
Yeah. And, you could just... he's got more good albums than bad albums, I think, you know. And it's a shame that he stopped. But equally, I like when people do that.
Yeah.
He just was like, have you read his book?
No.
Even in his book, he's like, what's the point? He's like, no one's buying records. Like, what's the point? And he's like, I have this great back catalogue. I can just go out every few years, play those songs, and make 10 times the money that I'd make from an album sale. So, you know. What's my last song?
Pick this for your top five?
Why?
Yeah. What drew you to this?
Top five lonely songs?
Yeah.
I think probably just because I feel quite lonely a lot of the time. We can get into that, but it's a bummer.
Go for it.
I don't know why. I don't know why I picked it. It was, I think, probably because it was the first one that I came up with, and I think I was listening to this Bobby Darin song, "I Want to Be Around," which is a jazz standard, and it's I don't know. I've always gravitated towards the darker side of songwriting, I think. And I don't mean dark like gothic or, you know, sadistic, but just like love songs are great.
Melancholic as well?
Yeah, like a love song, like there's loads of good love songs.
Mm.
And I've been in love, and love's, you know, it's fun for a while. And then it gets really shit. And like,
but that's when everyone writes the best songs.
Exactly, right? Like, those are my favourite love songs, are the ones
Heartbreak
that,
and tragic love songs.
Like, you know, Girl by the Beatles.
Yeah,
it's like, is there...
Ultimate Lonely Song, Eleanor Rigby. How fucking lonely is that song?
Very rude.
And the way he says lonely in the, look at all the lonely. He did not try to sound American in any way, shape or form in that song. And like girl, you know, she's the kind of girl you want so much it makes you sorry. Still, you don't regret a single day. It's like, they're dark lyrics. And yeah.
But they're also ones that you relate to once you're on the other side of it, or when you're going through it as well. Because when you do start going through your first sort of breakup and you do find your first love, but then you see the sour end of it, and you hear those songs, you're like, oh, this means a whole different thing to me now. Because I've been there, I've experienced it.
Yeah.
And so, it has that depth.
The Summer Wind, Frank Sinatra.
Yeah.
Do you know that one? And it's a song that I may have interpreted it as this.
How's that go, Josh?
It's the summer wind came strolling in from across the sea. And it's the idea that that his relationship is three people. It's him, it's his other half, and it's the summer wind. So the summer wind came strolling in from across the sea. It lingered there and touched your hair and walked with me or something like that. And then the girl leaves, and then at the end of the song, it's just him and the summer wind.
Yeah.
And there's this bitterness now in him being hit by this cool breeze, because it reminds him of being like, that's an unbelievable, to come up with a concept like that, that the wind can somehow be this lonely partner in a relationship or can remind you of being in love. It's so fucking dark and horrible. I love it. And so that's probably why I'm drawn to these songs, yeah. Like my fifth one is Bobby Darin, I Want to Be Around. Do you know that
I've
song?
I've never heard that.
It's a 2-minute song that has become like Tony Bennett sang it, and I think Frank Sinatra sang it. Everyone has had their pop at this song. But the Bobby Darin version is my favorite one. It's like 2 minutes long. I think it was the first version of the song I heard. And it's just about him saying, I want to be around when your next boyfriend breaks your heart. And it's this really like Schadenfreude horrible look at him, of a breakup. I think the lyrics are, I want to be around to pick up the pieces when somebody breaks your heart, somebody twice as smart as I. And then it's, I want to be around, somebody who swears to be true like you used to do with me. And someone who'll leave you to learn that misery loves company. Wait and see. And he goes, I want to be around to see how he does it when he breaks your heart to bits. Let's see if the puzzle fits, so fine. And he goes, and that's when I'll discover that revenge is sweet as I sit there applauding from a front row seat. It's just a lyrical, the lyrics bounce. The lyrics are just so bouncy. There isn't a piece of fat in any of those words, you know? And also, it just totally sums up, like, you know, like when you heard that your partner's been dumped and they dumped you. They broke your heart and now you've heard they've had their heart broken. And you know you shouldn't like that feeling.
Yeah.
But it's a human feeling to go, ha, ha, ha. Like, gutted.
Yeah.
You know? It's all falling apart for you. So that's my top five. Those are my top five lonely songs.
Don't know what.
Josh, but I think they're all kind of quite uplifting in a way as well. Maybe.
It's the weirdness because a lot of my favourite music, my friends will sometimes be like, turn that shit off now, Chris, because it is really moody and brooding. And I love it, but I don't, although it's quite atmospheric, like I'd say like Rabbit in Your Headlights by Uncle, which has got Tom York on it. And I love that song.
Is that the one in the tunnel?
Yeah, amazing music video. Yeah. And that's James Lavelle in the tunnel, I think, who they pull up and start talking to him.
This is such a nerdy question. Is that the Rotherhithe tunnel? What tunnel is it?
I don't know, actually. Is it Rotherhithe or is it...
Because I think it's four lanes in the video. Rotherhithe's two lanes.
I don't know. I don't know what tunnel that is.
Yeah. What's your favourite tunnel?
Top five tunnels.
This was turning out like an Alan fucking Partridge scene then.
I like the Rotherhithe northbound. I can hold my breath.
Dartford.
Blackwall.
Do you know why tunnels have bends in them? Because obviously, logically, it would make sense to just build a straight tunnel.
Sure.
Right? Tunnels have bends in them because when a horse used to see the end of the tunnel, it would freak out and bolt towards the end. So they had to put bends in them so the horses wouldn't all panic. Which is why the northbound Blackwall Tunnel, which is built in the 60s, is straight. And the southbound Blackwall Tunnel has bends in it.
I think maybe we use that one. We do audio caption, Josh, for this, and we'll put up one line.
Top five tunnels.
Top five tunnels.
I could do a top five tunnels. I love tunnels. You know the ones that go through mountains?
Yeah, or trees.
A tunnel through a tree?
When we finish this, I'm going to show you the best tunnel you've ever seen.
Oh, my God.
That sounds fucking
wrong.
Yeah,
I was going to say. she's got some strange social groups.
Yeah. Do you know what? It's the same when I listen to morose music a lot, and I get in a car and my wife and children generally will be listening to Kiss or something like that, which I just think, just get through it. It's her car, she can listen to what she wants. Yeah. She gets in my car, she's like, what's this? And I'm like, oh, it's Festival Weeks by Van Morrison. She went, it's dreadful. Turn it off. And it's like that. I can't listen to that. I can't listen to What's Going On anymore because she's like, I can't ever hear that again. I'm not allowed to listen to any Nick Cave. I'm not allowed to listen to Billy Bragg.
Yeah.
I'm Leonard Cohen. I'm really not allowed to listen to Leonard Cohen.
You've got, do you know the Billy Bragg song, Everybody Loves You, Babe, But Me?
Yeah.
From Will Self.
Yeah.
Well, no, William Bloke.
Yep.
Is that what the album's called?
Yeah, it was William Bloke.
That is like, I think that's his best song by a mile.
We went on Pip's podcast a couple of months back and done top five songs make you cry.
Yeah.
And Billy was two of my five.
Yeah.
What were they?
Tank Park Salute.
Yeah.
Do you know that song?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, just the opening lines of Kiss Me Goodnight and Say My Prayers, Leave the Light on the Top of the Stairs, Daddy, Is It True That We All Have to Die? Oh, fucking hell. Yeah. Like,
what about Shipbuilding?
Do you know what? It don't do it for me as
really?
It does
How
everyone
can it not
else.
Do it for you? It's an unbelievable song about a dad who builds the ship that his son goes off to war in and dies.
Yep. But
that's an amazing.
But do you know what Pip chose?
What?
That is in the same vein, which we was like, you fucking joking. Then you
this
thought
is a
about
bit of a
it.
Woody Allen one.
He said Two Little Boys by Rolf Harris. Do you know it?
No.
Yep.
It's
a good song.
Fucking heartbreaking.
Yeah, it's a good song.
About two friends that grow up together and they go to war together, and it's a reflection of when one of them gets injured and how he gets him. Oh, it's really fucking sad, but you can't listen to it.
So I'm assuming
that's
adulthood.
Not the one with the didgeridoo.
No.
And that's not the one with the...
I'm sure there was probably some of that going on in the recording studio, but yeah.
Oh, God.
yeah, it's...
Boing. Remember that? Boing. Can you guess what it is yet, mate?
Oh, dear.
Josh, thanks so much, mate, for coming on.
Thank you.
We've done like
me.
A top five, but little top five branches off there.
Yeah, absolutely.
And we kept it to just over an hour, so that's pretty impressive.
What I will say is the fives that we didn't do, we will be nicking them and doing them,
all of them.
For ourselves as well now, because they're fucking great lists.
Yeah, man. Yeah, it's outstanding.
Is this top five? This is top five lonely songs. Yeah.
In brackets, top five.
Yeah. It's going to be the largest Spotify playlist because we've just gone off on a fucking tangent about all things music, which is great.
Tweet in when this comes out. I hope you don't mind us linking you in on Twitter and whatnot when we post all
I would rather
sort of
you
stuff
didn't.
Out. And then and let's hear your top five lonely songs.
Yeah.
And any comments about the other top fives that Josh has sort of like... shown to us today as well.
Tweet us all your Bon Jovi tattoos as well.
Favourite Bon Jovi lyrics John. As well.
Yeah.
Wicked. Well, thank you very much for having me.
Our Josh, pleasure. Thanks loads,
this
mate.
Was a nightmare to pick a top
it's,
five.
It's crazy.
It was a nightmare.
Yeah, but you've done well because you managed to get most of them in. So all the ones that you weren't sure you was going to do or not, we've just done them anyway.
You got your money's worth out of that nightmare. And that's why we did it as a podcast. We didn't know what we'd do as a podcast. We thought, fucking, let's do a top five.
I only got the pun of the name yesterday, by the way, as well.
Because
I've been following the account or following your account for ages, right? And Pip, so I've been seeing it for years. And the last year, but I only just understood what hardcore listing is like, what it's ripping.
I was literally trying I was trying to convince you for our logo to be the swan, the weeping swan, which is a common fisting technique. But they were like, no, Chris, that's too in your face. We can't go
the
that
what
far.
Swan?
The weeping swan.
The weeping swan. Fuck yeah, me. Yeah, today I've no, mate. The weeping swan and I saw a brown swan. Fucking hell.
The brown swan, that is the remarkable. That's I can't tweet it because I don't want to tweet a picture of poo.
Yeah.
But I can say who it is. It's Jeff Lloyd. Do you know Jeff Lloyd, the DJ?
Really?
That's his poo. Jeff, if you're listening to he's not listening to this. He sent me a picture of his poo and he called it the brown swan. Like, he sent it to me like 4 years ago. And every 6 months, I text him and I'm like, when I'm drunk and I'm like, oh, you need to resend it. And true to he sends it
phone.
Every time, 2 minutes after. He's still very proud of that. Of
and
that
we've
bowel
seen
movement.
That and he should be.
He should be, man.
Yeah, it's magnificent.
That triggered a round of applause.
Well, on that.
Yeah, let's leave it at that.
Bombshell.
thanks, Josh, again,
Thank
man.
You
thanks
so much for having
mate.
Me.
There you have it. Josh Weller. What a great chat.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. It was a last minute change of top fives, and I'm glad he done it, because it obviously it was more muso chat, which is always good. And yeah, he's brilliant. If you enjoyed that, also be aware that Josh has recorded an episode of Off the Beaten Track podcast as well. So there'll be more music chat with Josh over there. And if you like your guitar band or musician hardcore listening chat, then have a look at our back catalogue. You know, we've chatted to some indie royalty. Block Party, The Smiths, blimey, The Maccabees. Oh God, there's way too many indie bands that we've chatted to and musicians. So go and have a little look through the back catalogue. Yeah, that's about all from me. So we will see you next week. Have a lovely week. Thanks for listening. See you soon. It's a drunken soiree in the Within. Chris and Stu present Hardcore Listing, the podcast.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.